Welcome to Ink in Your Veins. I'm your host, Rachel Herron. In this podcast, I talk to authors about the best things they've learned about writing so we can try those things too. I'll keep each episode short so you can get back to writing. Well, hello, writers. Welcome to episode number 439 of Ink in Your Veins. I'm Rachel Herron. So thrilled that you are here with me today as we are talking to Don King, who is just a genuine treat of a fellow. You are going to love listening to him and everything that we talk about. So that is coming up. Please don't miss Don. He's fantastic. What's been going on around here? Well, the Kickstarter is done. The Kickstarter is funded. It's over. I'm still reeling. I really am. Let's just talk about it. So the Kickstarter, I'm sure that we will have much more to say about it, and I will figure out how much I'm actually making from it after expenses. You know, this is what was pledged to me. And then, of course, books and mail and postage and all that has to go out. So I'm keeping track of every penny that I spend on Kickstarter. But on the Kickstarter, it closed at US dollars, $20,196. So about $20,200. Holy crap. I had set my goal for $2,000. I had desperately hoped I would do about five. I had allowed myself to dream about 15, and 20 seemed out of the question. But when I really say, like, I didn't know if I would make 5,000. It didn't really matter also, because this book is being published anyway. This book is done. No matter what I made, it was going to be worth it to me to be able to sell readers what they wanted. Remember that Kickstarter is not a charity, is not a GoFundMe. It's a sales page. It's a place to sell people more than just the book. It's a place to sell them additional things, experiences. And that's how it worked. And it was truly phenomenal. Let's see. So it funded at 1,009% of its goal. There were 415 backers. Amazing. And I thought I would just tell you where people came from who pledged, because I found that really interesting in this breakdown. The vast majority of them came from direct traffic, meaning the traffic that I sent. But that looks like it was about $14,000 came from direct traffic, from either me sending an email or the Kickstarter telling people who had signed up to know about the project that it was live. But then 12% came from Kickstarter internally. And I don't know what that actually means. I don't know if that's retargeting people who said that they were interested in the project or not. But I know that from Advanced Discovery Kickstarter and Search Kickstarter, that was 4%. That was almost $900. More than $900 that came just from people goofing around on Kickstarter, just people searching. I am assuming that it helps that it was considered a project we love. They decided that it was a project we love. I don't think you can apply for that. I think they just look around and look for high quality projects that are not, you know, somebody just throwing something up on the internet and hoping that it sticks. So people came from there. It looks like, this was interesting to me. Places where I pushed things out. Let's see. YouTube made $162. Six backers came directly from YouTube. Eight backers came from Facebook for $171. And on Facebook, what I did was I put up a couple of posts about it, not enough posts about it. And then on the day before it ended, I spent $15 on a boosted post that I boosted to my followers. So that's the only advertising I did for it. Eight backers came from Linktree to the tune of $226. And Linktree is what I link in my TikTok, which I did not use at all. I think I put up one about it. And, but mostly Instagram. Whenever I posted anything on Instagram, which again, wasn't that often, probably four, five or maybe five times, I would say in the text, link in bio. And then if you went to my link at the top, it went straight to Kickstarter. It didn't go straight to Kickstarter. It went straight to Linktree. And then the top line on the Linktree was the Kickstarter. I think I eventually changed that so that it was a one click, and I probably should have had that. I should have done that on all of my social media platforms when the Kickstarter started. It was one of those things I realized on the second to last day that no one should have to look at a link tree. They should just click the one link that you want them to go to, which is the Kickstarter. So now I've got to remember to go back and change those. So that is where everyone came from. A surprising amount from Kickstarter itself, which is what I had heard. And I am thrilled to find out that it is true. So what happens next? Okay, so for me, this is what happens next. I had four stretch goals. I had four stretch goals. I'm giggling because I threw a panic one in on the second to last day. I had at $10,000, we would get a family portrait drawn, and the backers have voted. The family portrait that will go in all of the books in black and white and in color in the ebooks that people can read on color devices. It will be a family portrait of me and Lala and Junebug on a sailboat, which is incredibly awesome because I didn't know that would win. That one would win, but I'm glad it did. There's a whole chapter about sailing, and there's a bunch about Junebug in this book, so that'll be fun. At $15,000, I had a stretch goal of writing a bonus epilogue, so I'm going to try to do that next week because I want to do this all as fast as possible because I want to fulfill this Kickstarter, and I can't actually fulfill it in its entirety until we have the art to go inside and the epilogue written, revised, and recorded for the audiobook. So I need to do that ASAP. Excited to write the epilogue. And then I had a final goal at $20,000 that I would record a version of Woody Guthrie and Billy Bragg and Wilco did a version of California Stars, which features in one of the chapters that has my sisters in it. And I talk about singing that song with them. It was one of our mom's favorite songs. And we're going to record that. My sister lives here now, so she and I are going to do the harmony. Sadly, we won't have my other sister to do it with, but we're going to do that. I never thought I would have to do this. I'm pleased to do it. I do love to sing, but that will be out of my comfort zone to actually record that. So that was the $20,000 goal. Here's something that happened on 2 days before the end of the Kickstarter. I had just broken $18,000. And then I woke up the next morning and $300 had gone away. And now I'm back in the $17,000 range. And I thought, well, you know, that's okay, but that's weird. That's kind of wild. And I realized that I had gotten these emails, or sorry, not emails, but messages within Kickstarter from people who said, oh, I love your project. I'm also doing a Kickstarter. I'm backing you. So excited. Let me know if you want to push my Kickstarter as well. And I only looked at the first one that somebody sent me, and she was pushing a book on making drinks, a cocktail book. And since I don't drink and a lot of people who are around me don't drink, I just wrote a nice note saying, you know, that's awesome. Thank you so much. But I'm sober and thanks. I think I said it better than that. But then I kept getting those kind of messages and I realized there's a cottage industry behind Kickstarter of people looking to market this way of they put $50 or $75 into somebody else's Kickstarter in hopes that that person will then push theirs. And then they take the money back right before it closes. So that was super interesting to me. And I'm glad that I hadn't really wasted time looking at the other ones. But then, so now I'm on, you know, I'm 17,000 something, two more days. I'm not going to hit $20,000. I know that. I'm so close to 18,000. Can I hit 19? So I threw in a last minute, last ditch stretch goal that I made up at the food court where I was working that morning, the day before, that said, if we hit $19,000, we'll have a launch party where we will talk about packing light. Because I really honestly asked myself, what do I love to talk about? What do I love to think about? What is connected to this book about getting unstuck? Well, there is a lot about packing in this book. And I love to talk about luggage and suitcases and packing hacks and tips and tricks. Plus, that makes a launch party easier because it's not just all about me and talking about the book. It's about something that I'm excited about. I'm excited about the book, of course, but I'm really excited about packing. So that gave me something to send another email to my list about, and it gave me something to do another update in Kickstarter about, and another something to put on social media. And then we rapidly hit the $19,000 mark. And then by the time that it closed the next day, we were over 20,000. And a friend said that that was really smart of me to do that last minute, just below the final stretch goal. And it was absolutely not me being smart. It was me being panicked and not knowing what to do, which, you know, that's also a valid way to live life. All right. So what happened? Also, what happens next is I've got to do those things. And then I'm going to start fulfilling the things like the coaching, getting the other things to people. I have another, Mona McDermid, a dear friend, who was on the show and did one of the Unstuck episodes. We chatted the day that it closed. And I was like, oh, I've got a lot to do now. Now I can work hard. I can stop stressing about marketing and I could just work hard. And she said, why don't you take a couple of days off? So I'm doing that. Next week is when I will start lining out all fulfillment and doing all of the things and checking off the boxes. But for the rest of this week, it is Thursday where I am. Thursday and Friday, I'm going to do a little bit of work, do some writing, but mostly take it easy. It's Anzac Day today here, so nobody's really working. I'm going to go out and maybe have a picnic. It's very windy. And just really enjoy this. There, of course, I have struggled with the imposter syndrome feeling, the how dare I feeling. I don't struggle very hard or for very long because I do know that this book is good. The Kickstarter did well because people want the book. There's nobody out there thinking, oh, poor Rachel, I'm going to throw her a little bit of cash to make her feel better. As the Kickstarter grew, it was obvious that this was kind of really awesome. Truly. It was obvious that I didn't need that. I'd already hit my goal, etc. People only pledged money because they wanted to. And I get to take that in and truly enjoy it and be grateful for it. Grateful for the opportunity to be able to do this and grateful for the opportunity to be able to fulfill this well and beautifully. And it's just amazing that we can do this. That this is a possibility. Anyway, I'm still quite gobsmacked and I get a tiny little bit of a like ice cream headache when I think too hard about how awesome it is. So it's good practice to think about how awesome it is because I don't need an ice cream headache. I just need to be comfortable with feeling this pride. I am proud of this. And I'm also really glad I don't have to market it anymore. I will have to market it when it comes out on my Shopify store. And then later when it goes wide everywhere else, I will tell people about it. But that'll be so much less pressure, honestly. Usually a launch feels like a lot, but not after you do a Kickstarter, baby. Mm-mm, you have launched. So would I do Kickstarter again? Absolutely. Would I go into it knowing it's a lot more work than I thought it was? And I thought it was going to be a lot of work. Yes. And that's cool. I like work. And it's been really fun. So if you supported, thank you very much. And if you didn't, that's also absolutely fine. You're supporting just by listening to this show. Amazing. I'm going to stop talking about Kickstarter now. And let's start talking about Don King, who is the confidence cultivator. He's a professor of communication studies, which means a professor of standing up in front of people and saying stuff. He's also an author, a pastor, a speaker, and a communication coach. He started writing for a newspaper at age 14 and made part, or at times, all of his living writing for over 40 years. But when his disabled daughter came along, he thought his well had dried up and he was unable to write for over a decade. A year ago, his muse started talking to him again, and he has written two books in the Sparklight series and has a third in process. Please enjoy this delightful interview with Don. Thank you so much for being here and for listening. And here we go. Well, I have been looking forward to this. I'm so pleased to welcome you to the show. Will you please share your name and your pronouns with us?
My name is Don King, and he, him.
Thank you, Don. It's a joy to see you. I was on your podcast. What was it? A couple months ago now?
It was, we broadcast it towards the end of December. I think we recorded it in November.
Oh my gosh. Time is a slippery little thing. It feels like a minute ago. And it was one of those invitations. You invited me to be on your show. And then I immediately said, after we were done, I said, you must come on my show because I enjoyed talking to you so
it was so much
much.
Fun. Yeah.
You
And
are
that's
just
the
so
reason
cool.
I do podcasts. You know, I've got to tell you, I'm envious of the dynamic. Every time I hear you and Sasha Black talk, I think you guys have so much fun. Oh, that
well,
is
let's
wonderful.
Have as much fun as me and Sasha Black have then, right now. Here we go. All right. Tell us a little bit about your writing practice. I've already given your intro by the time that people have heard this, but you thought the well had dried up and then it came back. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, well, and not knowing how much detail you go into, the brief version is I started writing when I was 14 years old, which was over 50 years ago. And as you just mentioned, I hit a spot where for a little over a decade, it wasn't writer's block. I mean, not only do I know what that feels like, I know how to deal with it. I started working at a newspaper at 14. Mm. And as you know, newspaper editors have no patience for, I'm not feeling it today. I mean, you know, the deadline's at 3 o'clock.
Right. You're going to hit it, period.
Yeah. And so this was different. The best I could come up with was, as you said, the feeling was the well has gone dry. And I really thought that part of my life was over. So I'm fortunate to have friends who are writers. And one of them, Jeff West, who wound up writing the foreword to the book that came out last October, he was looking for ideas. I said, Jeff, here's an idea. If you want it, you can have it. And he said, yeah, you need to write this. And I didn't really know whether I could or not. I thought, well, I'll give it a shot. I've published books before, but one of them was a textbook in an academic market. A couple of specialty ones, like a really scintillating one about parliamentary procedure. You know, and so this was different. And when I started writing, it was like somebody had turned the faucet on again. And I know on your show, one of the things I value is, you know, we talk about the real world aspects of mental health and that sort of thing. I had told myself that I wasn't writing because I was depressed. And it turned out that I was depressed because I wasn't writing.
A freaking men. That is incredible. And what a gift your friend gave you in telling you that. So since then, the jam has been unjammed. The logs are flowing. What is your process now? What does your writing process look like on a day-to-day basis?
Do we mean the ideal or the reality?
Oh, I want both. Both, please.
Okay. So, and to be fair, you know, one of the things that happened with that book that Jeff got me started on, I was on a 1-year medical leave of absence from the college where I teach. So it was sort of a trial retirement. Now, I'm back in the classroom this semester, but I'll be retiring in July. And so I was able to find out what it would be like to be able to be a full-time writer, which is what I have always wanted to do. So during that year, I would get up in the morning, do the breakfast thing and all that sort of thing, take care of the various folks in the household that I care for. We have a severely disabled daughter, and my wife is partially disabled, but she can get around in a wheelchair. And so I found that if we would go to the local coffee shop, which wound up being the setting for the way the three were one, it was, I don't know, in a way it was more expensive than getting co-writing space. You know, we're fortunate to have here in our little town a co-writing space to where I could rent it for $10 a day. And I thought, okay, you know, the $10, I can go to the coffee shop and I won't have to spend that. I will guarantee you we spent more than $10 a day.
Absolutely. Yes, it adds up.
But, you know, two or three, 4 hours, it would depend on whether we had a nursing staff that evening for my daughter. And we just stay until we closed the coffee shop down. And that was the writing routine. Now, I have to say, these days I'm a binge writer. I have a certain number of hours a day, and right now I'm using it for creating cover material for the second book. Last, November, when we had NaNoWriMo, that was when I wrote the second book. But then I spent January as part of your community. Didn't get in there too often, quite honestly, but you kind of continued it. The idea of mentally, at least, being together.
Yeah.
And I spent January editing that book.
That is fantastic. So you are kind of a serial binger in production terms, which I actually really do too. Like, I will be writing, and then I'll be revising, and then I'll be doing the production and the managing and the shabby advertising kind of things that I do. But you focus on one thing and go there then.
Yes.
So in terms of the writing, what things have you found that help you the most to write?
What things?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. And I have to say, just continuing a little bit with the routine or lack thereof.
Oh, yes.
When I'm in with my daughter, she can, how do I put this? She has veto power over my plans.
As she should.
Yes. But there are often stretches of time when I can actually work in her room. So you know, that will get things done. And so I just need to be very portable with my writing.
Yeah.
As I said, starting at the newspaper at age 14, I learned to touch type by age 15. And so it's got to be a keyboard. And I just take my laptop with me. Scrivener has been a godsend.
Isn't it the best?
Yeah, I love Scrivener. And then in between that and Atticus, I'm using Atticus for formatting. But then I'm finding, I don't know, this last time when I would make edits, I'd find things while I was in Atticus, and I would feel compelled to go back into Scrivener and make the same correction to make sure they stayed the same.
That's useful. I do the same thing. I use Vellum, not Atticus. But if I do change something in Vellum, I go change it in there. I don't know if I'll ever need it again. But if I did, I'd pick myself. Or, you know, I knew I made changes, but where are they? I have no idea. So
exactly.
That's smart.
Smart. And I have to say, I'm fairly techie. Among the liberal arts folks that I work with, they consider me to be very techie. But that's like being the best hockey player at the nursing home. It doesn't mean a whole lot. So I don't quite trust the thing out there on the web. In fact, as I was editing Medium Well, which is the second book, I suddenly realized, wait a minute, chapter 6 is starting right in the middle. There are 3 scenes that have disappeared.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
They just skedaddled.
And I have no idea why. I had just gotten one of those error messages that said we're unable to sync it up.
And it ate something.
It ate something. And so because I still had it over in Scrivener, I just went and copied and pasted it back in.
And you are attesting to the need to have backups everywhere we work. Everywhere we work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of my good friends lost her entire master's thesis. Back in the day, you know, back, it was the early 90s, but she was working on a computer and it all just went away. So
I've known a couple of people to lose their whole books.
Yes.
Their entire
well, and
books.
The college where I teach, we got hit by a ransomware attack 2 years ago. And we had everything backed up, you know, like you're supposed to. But the pirates, I don't usually use that term when I refer to them, but I'll try to keep it a little family friendly here. They apparently infected our system 3 or 4 months prior. And so all the backups were infected, and I lost 30 years of academic work.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
That's horrifying. I'm so sorry that happened.
So, well, it was a lesson in letting go, you know.
Yeah.
Very zen kind of thing.
Which kind of goes right into what you write. So though there's some things that have helped you write, Scrivener, your laptop, a zen attitude.
Yes.
What's the most exciting thing you've ever learned about your writing process?
I because of the academic background, I always thought I should be a plotter, but I'm not. I am somewhat of a planter, I guess is that term that we use. But I also relate to, trying to think who it was that I read this years ago. They would say I meant for my character to go down to the corner, walking and turn left, and instead they get in a car and drive down there and turn right.
Yeah, I love that.
So,
you have an idea of where you're going, but then all bets are off.
Yeah, it's going to change. And I mean, that goes along with, you know, our daughter has taught us, make your plans, but hold them lightly because they're going to change.
How old is she now?
She is about to turn 21.
Oh, amazing.
And, you know, don't want to be morbid or anything. She has such a rare chromosomal disorder that nobody has any idea what her prospects might be. And so, you know, we live with uncertainty, but so does everybody. It's just we have literally been disillusioned.
Right. You have to stare into that uncertainty all the time.
Right. And you can't wait for things to get back to normal, because normal is just a setting on a dryer, you know.
You are full of really good sayings.
Well, it happens when you get old, you know. There's a lot of years there to accumulate. I can't take credit for most of them, but I can't remember the sources either. So
we're giving the, I'm going to give the credit to you. If it's the first time I've heard them, there you go. All right. What part of writing do you struggle with the most?
Probably the business side. I understand it intellectually. It's not that I don't know what to do. It's that with the limited time that I have, I don't like doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if this is a blessing or a curse, because I'm on the cusp of retiring from the college. I've had a good day job all these years, and the college has been very supportive of me with my daughter, with my writing. You know, we're in pretty good shape financially. I don't have to get the marketing figured out in order to pay the mortgage.
Right. That's good. No, that is a blessing. That's just solid
blessing.
It takes
pressure off. But on the other hand, I'm not so much worried about making money. It's that if I've written something that makes a difference to someone, then I want to find them and make it available to them.
Yeah.
So I want to be effective with the marketing, not so much to make a lot of money, although that would be great, but to serve the people who need the writing, you know.
What I really like about that, though, is that you have a real why you want the book to be out there. And so the marketing angle, we get closer and closer to it. I have no doubt that you are going to continue working on it. But right now, you're working on the second book. And that's where the focus is.
That one is on the verge of publishing, and I'm about a third of the way through the third book.
And this is in the Sparklight series, yes?
Sparklight Chronicles, yes.
Sparklight Chronicles. Perfect.
Yeah.
Can you share a craft tip with us of any sort?
Let's see. One that dates back to the journalism days, the newspaper days. I learned early that you don't interrupt the writing process. And this was back in the days of manual typewriters. So, you know, you type it up, you're going to retype it. Okay. And so if there's something that I know I'm going to need, put it in square brackets with the symbol TK, which means to come. Now, I know that's not how you spell it, but in English, there are very few words that have a T followed by a K. And so when we got into computers, that was a quick search to find those things.
Yeah.
Now, what I do in Scrivener now is you hardly ever use square brackets in any real writing. And so I don't even worry about the TK. I just make notes to myself in the square brackets. The one thing I have to make sure of is before I hit the submit to Amazon and draft to digital that I've done a search for all those square brackets.
I do the exact same thing, but I use an asterisk because I don't use that often. And I always have in all of my revision post-it notes, I always have a post-it note that says, check for the asterisk. And I've got to get rid of all those post-it notes before something goes out and off my desk. Yeah. So yeah, because I have definitely forgotten. And you just leave, you're leaving out a big piece of research that perhaps you haven't looked up the thing yet. Yeah. But what that, tell us what that does for you in the writing. It preserves your flow.
Just keeps the flow going, keeps the flow going. And sometimes it's, you know, look up how to spell something. Sometimes it's you know, verify. I remember when I was writing a medium well, which is set in a hospital, there were a lot of medical type things that I would say, verify that this is the way it actually works.
Yeah. Perfect. And you don't stop, because if you do, there's your time.
Yep.
You're now done for the day.
Lose the flow. Well, once I get a flow going, it wasn't hard to do 2,000, 3,000 words a day.
That's amazing. That's so, so cool. So that's a great craft tip. But what about a mindset tip for writers?
Oh, I think a couple of things there. One is to separate writing and editing. They are two different frames of mind.
Yes.
So I have always been one to let it flow, you know, writing on the right side of the brain and all that sort of thing. Was it Stephen King who said, write with the door closed, edit with the door open, or
something
like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's a mindset tip. The other is to not think about marketing while I'm writing, but think about it while I'm editing.
Yeah. I like to think about marketing before I start the book and late stages of revision. But if I think about it in early drafts, I'm stopped. I'm just frozen because I absolutely know that every decision I've ever made about this book is completely wrong. It will never sell a single copy. Yeah. Yeah. You have learned these excellent tips well. So what is the kindest thing you've ever done for yourself as a writer?
I knew you were going to be asking some of these questions. And so I thought about that one, and I really think it's starting to write again. I've mentioned a couple of times, I'm on the verge of retirement. You know, there's a part of me that's going, just sit, not literally sit in the rocking chair, but, you know, just take it easy, you know? And, I have to admit that part of it is my wife keeps saying, you're not going to stop. You're going to keep filling all the time with something, you know? And so there is a temptation to just kind of take it easy.
Yeah.
And so to allow myself to, and I've got two or three competing things going on in my head right now. I think most of us know, am I saying J.D. Salinger?
Yeah.
Okay. I couldn't remember J.D. all of a sudden. Wasn't sure. You know, when he didn't like the way that publishing went, then he wrote for himself, which is primarily what you want to do, of course. But then for the most part, never shared any of it with the rest of the world. And so I want to write for myself, but I also want to edit well, and I want to publish well, and I want to have a good cover. And you know, I don't know if it's pride of craftsmanship or what it might be. I'm an old radio guy too. You and I talked about that.
Yeah.
When you were on my podcast.
Yeah. That's where your beautiful voice comes from.
And thank you. But where it comes in, like right here, just before we started recording, I said, does it sound okay?
Yeah.
I take some professional pride in having a good sound.
Yeah.
And so the same sort of thing with the writing. If nobody else ever read it, I would still want to have it to where somebody could read it. And I would still be proud of it.
I love that. That is a very kind place to stand for all of us with our writing, to want it to be as professional as we can possibly make it. And we honor ourselves as artists and creators by doing that, I think.
And to recognize that there are multiple ways to be that.
Yeah.
You know, my writing doesn't have to sound like Rachel Herron's. It doesn't have to sound like Stephen King's.
Thank goodness. It only has to sound like you. Yeah. I'm actually reading a memoir right now. A year of J.D. Salinger, or my year with J.D. Salinger. And it's
Oh,
about
wow.
a literary agent, or no, sorry, an assistant in a literary agency who has to deal with J.D. Salinger. And
Yeah.
it's pretty great and pretty fun. But you just made me think
Interesting.
about that.
I'm
All
gonna
right.
have to
So
look at it.
speaking of books, what is the best book that you've read recently and why did you love
And that was another one I knew you were going to be
it?
asking. So what I did was to pick up my Kindle, just to kind of see. And I'm ashamed to say, Rachel, that I am in the middle, if I can put it that way, of reading about a dozen books.
I'm with you.
And I haven't finished many of them,
I do the same thing. I read a lot of books till about 50%, and then I get interested in something else.
And so I'll just mention two or three of them here. I went back for a favorite classic, as far as I'm concerned, Robert A. Heinlein, which when I started as a reader, I loved Robert Heinlein books, science fiction for those who might not be familiar with it, and reread Time Enough for Love, which I think is a classic of his. A more modern one, I love Garrison Keillor's voice, and so I'm reading Boomtown right now. And this sounds like I'm sucking up to you, but it's for real. Unstuck is right up there at the top of this thing right now.
Because you are a
I wish I had
patron.
had this back in December.
Oh, thank you. That's lovely. You got an early copy because you're a patron, and I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. I've also looking at craft stuff. One of the best books that I've read recently is by Wolf Moon, published by our friend Mark Leslie Lefebvre through his Stark Publishing. The name of the book is How to Write a Howling Good Story.
Ooh, and it's good. You like it?
I like it. I like it. Wolf has some insights into the classic story structure that goes beyond what we typically hear.
Ooh, I'll have to
And
check that out.
not to give away his stuff, but there's two things in particular that he points out that when you read it and then you look at classic stories, you can say, oh yeah, I see that, but I've never seen it before.
Oh, cool. Well, now you've whetted all of our appetite for it, so we're all going to have to go check
Absolutely.
that
Absolutely. And I'm also reading James Scott Bell's Write Your Novel from the Middle, which helps, I think, get at that Planter thing. Okay.
And the
For
sagging middle
fun,
part, yeah.
yeah, absolutely. For fun, I'm reading Talia Hibbert's book, Act Your Age, Eve Brown. It's a romance.
Fun.
I just love the craft of words. And I think that she does such a great job with what she's doing. And I found out that somebody from my little hometown in West Tennessee, who never left, but her mother was my English teacher. And she has written a book, and she will be releasing a second book, which I don't know the name of that one, but I'm going to put this one out there. It is entitled Tilted. It's by Nancy Hall,
Very
and it is
cool.
what I think we could probably describe it as Southern Gothic.
Ooh, I do love a Southern Gothic. How fun. Well, thank you for those. Thank you, Don. All right. Would you tell me about a moment that you knew you had ink in your veins?
Probably going back to that newspaper thing. I had, without going into a lot of detail, I was 14 years old. I had been snagged by the advisor for the student newspaper as a photographer. Okay. And because I was shooting the sports for the junior high and the high school, the newspaper editor was the one who was covering the sports stuff for the local newspaper. So I was always on the sidelines with him. And he said, well, if you want to come down to the newspaper office, we've got this old dark room that nobody's used for a
Oh
year. You
my
can try it
gosh.
out. And so I went, and then as I was hanging around the newspaper, they're not paying me, of course. They're just letting me use the dark room. But and I don't think you get away with this these days legally.
No, and if that had been offered to me, I would have given them my allowance just to hang out behind a
I mean,
curtain
this is an
there. I would have done
apprenticeship thing.
anything. Yeah.
I got to hang around, and then after a while, Charles Dawson was the editor. Charles said, yeah, you want to write up one of these sports stories? So I don't know anything about sports, but I know how to write. So yeah, I'll give it a shot. And so when we're asking for a moment, there's not a moment, but gradually. Now, I'm still doing this free of charge, of course. But then I needed to earn some money, and I got a job driving a delivery truck at a dry cleaner's. And Charles said, well, if you're going to do that, heck, we'll pay you.
He and saw his free labor leaving. He saw the labor leaving, and he needed it. So he could pay for it.
He'd gotten used to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, so that, and I tell people I did major in journalism in undergraduate school, but honestly, it was because it was as close as I could get to not declaring a major, you know, because journalists by virtue of what they do, they poke their nose into all aspects of human experience. And that's what I was really interested in.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a really great answer to that question. I never know where this answer is going to go, that what this question is going to take us in here. Well, let's talk about you and your book that's out right now. Will you tell us a little bit about The Way of the Three-Year-Old Why, which I have started and not quite finished yet, but I'm loving it. The barista, perfect. Tell us a little bit about it.
Excellent. Well, and I will say that because I don't want our, spoilers, no spoilers, as they say on Doctor Who.
Yep.
But the barista is not quite what she appears to be.
Ooh.
So I'll put that out there and drop a little hint. I was just listening to one of your episodes recently, which I can't remember exactly who the guest was, but you all were talking quite a bit about the muse.
Yes. That was a great Lefty Obey. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, that's it. And so the idea of your source of inspiration, your muse, figures heavily into The Way of the Three-Year-Old Why, figures into Medium Well, figures into Real Speak, which is the third book. So The Way of the Three-Year-Old Why is not exactly autobiographical, but it is based in our experience. Dan Roberts is the focal character. He has struggled to get a speaking business going for years, which was true for me. And just like me, Dan has a disabled daughter, and taking care of her has made it difficult for him to schedule anything. Mm-hmm. And I took that inspiration again from Hannah. She's been hospitalized somewhere between 35 and 40 times in her life. And she has a bad habit of going to the ER, needing to go to the ER and not scheduling that with us.
Weird.
Yeah. And so I would, back in the day, you'd schedule for a speech 6 months to a year out. And then I'd wind up calling 3 weeks ahead of time and say, I'm sorry, can't make it. I just couldn't do that to clients. So Dan is struggling with something similar. And just like me, at the verge of retirement, trying to figure out what to do with the rest of his life, thinking he's going to be able to get this speaking business going because he's about to retire. And so you can see there's a meta narrative there. Mm-hmm. My life and experience was feeding this. On the other hand, while the coffee shop is real, unfortunately, there is no barista like Callie in my life. But somebody keeps leaving Dan mysterious notes. I didn't get any mysterious notes either. I guess maybe I was wishing for them.
Yeah, of course.
So now it is a business parable. I don't think we've mentioned that. And so I find this interesting, by the way, Rachel, that there is no BISAC category for these things.
Oh, that's interesting because it is such a, I wouldn't say it's inundated. There's not thousands and thousands of these books, but the business parable books that blow up, there are multiple. And
yes,
we know
there are
that as
dozens of them.
We know that as I consider it a genre. So that's interesting.
I think most readers would. And so, for folks who may not be familiar with it, it uses fiction techniques to make nonfiction points.
Yeah.
And without naming names, you and I both know that the stories there can be kind of thin sometimes. The characters a little wooden, because they came up with the ideas first and then kind of layered a story on top of it.
And they might not have been writers, these people who, and you've been a writer your whole life. There's the difference.
So it was really important to me that the story that would carry the nonfiction lessons had to be a good story that would be readable engaging, interesting, mm-hmm. whether or not there was a nonfiction element to it.
Mm-hmm.
So well-known books like this, Who Moved My Cheese, The Richest Man in Babylon, The Greatest Salesman in the World, Og Mandino,
mm-hmm.
More modern versions like The Go-Giver, Bob Berg and John David Mann, they're masters of the craft there.
I don't know that one, actually.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. And Rachel, from what I know about you personally, you are a go-giver. You would recognize the principles they're talking
I'm
about
gonna
there.
Have
and
to check that book out too.
There you go. And it's a good story.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. So so as far as the genre thing, there are a series of books for the go-giver. There's the go-giver leader, go-giver oh, I forget some of the others. But if you go try to find them in a bookstore, this is where the buy sack categories come in. They're shelved all over the store.
Right. They could be self-help. They could be business. Mm-hmm. They could be straight up nonfiction. But
there's the go-giver marriage, which is over there in marriage and family.
Relationships. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice thing about, I mean, that's not a nice thing, but because this does seem to be perhaps a genre or a niche that is perhaps underserved, when you do reach the phase where you're going to be like, okay, now I'm going to focus all of my attention on the advertising / marketing, you can target those books. You can, especially in Amazon, you can target exactly those books to run Amazon ads to. And those are going to be underserved ads is what I would guess. I have never researched this myself, but that's what I would imagine, you know, especially a well-written one that has a great cover. The Way of the Three-Year-Old Wife is a great cover. You didn't do that yourself, did you?
No, I did not.
Okay. It looks too professional. It's so good.
I have the technical capabilities to do it, but I am not an artist.
Yep.
And I think, how should I put this? I could do it, but my time is better spent with the writing and the editing.
You and I are so alike. For Unstuck, I came about, I don't know, 85 to 90% of the way getting the cover the way I wanted it. And then I just threw it out the window and I hired somebody to do it who immediately carried out what I wanted, but I couldn't get the art to where it needed to be. I had the, you know, so we take our hands off and we hire somebody. And it shows. I looked at that cover and thought, this is a cover that face out on a Barnes & Noble shelf would just exactly work.
Absolutely. And would it be okay if I put the cover up here in the frame?
Yes. However, most people don't watch on the podcast. So if you want to describe it as well for people listening.
Oh, that's a really good idea.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. So it's The Way of the Three-Year-Old Why. And what I really like is the font almost looks like it's shiny in the middle with what they did with the text. There's
a sunburst there.
Yeah, sunburst. And they've got it's a beautiful coffee cup line drawing in there. It's cream. It fits into his genre perfectly. Perfectly.
And what we worked with them, I'll give credit where credit is due. This came from 100covers.com.
Nice.
Okay. So they're a member of Ally. The Alliance of Independent Authors.
Yeah, I've used them in the past.
And I'm just checking, Rachel, if I'm not putting you on the spot, you spotted the question mark in the middle of the coffee stand, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely.
And so that ties
and it's the
in.
Only piece of color coming up. It's a black and white line drawing of a coffee cup with some steam coming up, but the red, I think it's red.
It is red, yes.
It shows a question mark coming up. Yeah, no, it's beautiful.
And see, and they worked with me to get that thing looking just right.
Mm-hmm.
And so the medium well cover, which I'm putting up right now.
Oh, that's great. Can you describe that one for us?
Very similar layout. We've got a different color. I learned from looking at Joe Penn's books about how she would use the same kind of layout, but vary the colors. And so we do have the sunburst in the middle of the title for medium well. There's a subtitle on both books. And instead of a coffee cup, we have a unicorn because there's a unicorn figurine that figures into a scene in the book.
You know what I love is it's whimsical, but it's still reading business parable, interiority, self-help kind of thing.
Exactly.
A unicorn could easily go to, you know, ballerina princess, three-year-old, and it doesn't.
Right, right. And again, I know that there are people who hear us only on audio, but I'm going to make it a little bigger to see if you can see the question mark.
Oh, in the tail of the unicorn.
Yeah.
Oh, that is precious. I love it.
So we We've carried on a theme throughout,
Wow.
and the 100 Covers folks just worked with me to get that just right.
Well done. And they are pretty affordable, if I remember right. Aren't they
Yes.
500-ish or so?
Well, that's actually what the 100 means. Okay, it's $100 for an ebook cover,
Right.
and then they will extend it for your print stuff for another 100.
Oh, okay. So not even, well, you really hit it with that. Well done. And they do, don't they do unlimited redos? Is that
Yes.
them? Yeah.
Yes,
Okay.
that's them. That's
So,
them.
oh, good to
Very
know.
pleased with them.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so where can we find you out there and everything you're doing?
Probably the best place is my website, which is donking.com. And just like Joe says, that's Don with a double N, DonKing.com. And
Perfect.
to get to the stuff that's specific to the books, you can go to donking.com/3YO. That's the number 3 and the letters YO. And then if you're interested in the follow-up, it is donking.com/mediumwell, all one word.
And you have a fantastic podcast. Tell us where that is.
And thank you for remembering that. Yeah,
You would have kicked yourself later.
yes, I would have. I very much would have. So the podcast is called The Alignment Show. It is housed inside my Substack. And so the Substack is confidencecultivators.com. I'm emphasizing the S, confidencecultivators.com. And then you will find the podcast on there, including back episodes. And the one with Rachel was on December 29th, 2023.
And that
I
was a
told you at
joy.
the time that was my birthday present to
Oh,
myself.
that's right. I remember that. And
Yeah.
you are just such a good interviewer. You listen and you care and you ask probing, deep questions. And I really appreciated the time that we
Thank you.
spent together. And it's just a joy to talk to you about your process and your books and breaking through the block and depression and coming out on top with these beautiful books that are making a difference.
Thank you so much.
So.
It is truly an honor to. I've told my wife this, to me, this is like being on Larry King or the Today Show or something. I have been listening to you for a long time, read your books. I'm just so happy to be here. Thank you
Oh,
so much.
thank you, Don. Take care, and we'll talk soon.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of Ink in Your Veins. You can reach me at my website, rachelherron.com, and you can also support me at patreon.com/Rachel, RACHAEL, where I have all sorts of great stuff for writers for as little as a buck a month. And do sign up for my free writer's email list of encouragement at rachelherron.com/write. Now, get to writing, my friends.